Okay. How many of you know who I am? Good. Because that's the least important thing I want you to get out of this whole session this afternoon is who I am, okay? You can read about that later, or you can find out later, or I'll be glad to answer questions. But what I am praying is that all of us will be open to what I truly believe is important to God and therefore needs to be important to us. I want to start off because you never know who's in the audience that you're talking to, and we're all different. And some of us like details. We like numbers. We like statistics. And some of us just like stories. So I promise you we're going to have both. So I'm going to start off with the statistics of just a little bit and get that out of the way so we can get on to what I enjoy the most is some of the stories. But let me start by asking a question. As people, okay, as people in general, are we important? Are we significant? Do we have value? Or some would say worth as humans? You know, I think that's a fair question that we need to consider. But in light of that question, in 2016, the FBI reported that 17,250 Americans were murdered that year. That was an increase of 8.6% over the previous year. The UN reported that 795 million people, okay, that's million, almost a billion, 795 million people will go to bed hungry tonight and are living very unhealthy lives. Someone else has figured out, because some people, they're just good at all this stuff. Someone else has figured out it would take at least $19 billion, with a B, dollars to feed those people every year. Guess what Americans generally spend on average for pet food every year? $19 billion. 29% of the American children do not have an adult parent in the home with a full-time job. That's not seasonal. We're very quickly approaching the point of 50% of all children living with single parents. 65% of American fourth graders are reading below the fourth grade average. And you go, well, what's that got to do with anything? Well, it just so happens that for years and years now, we know that that particular evaluation of fourth grade reading level is a great predictor of a child becoming an adult and whether or not they'll be incarcerated, addicted, or having to live on public welfare. One out of five children. Let me stop before I go any further there. What are you going to do when this session is over?
Go get my child.
Good for you. They will bless you for that. And then what are you going to do, though?
Go eat.
Or figure out where you're going to eat. Or get with your group and your friends or family and where are we going to go eat? But did you know one out of five children will not have supper tonight and will go to bed hungry? Did you know that every year the number of babies that are aborted in the womb equals the number of American soldiers who have died in every single American war to date. And that takes place every year. So, enough statistics. If we have value, if we are important and significant, then why in the world do we have all this chaos in the world? Why do we see all this chaos in this country? Why do, or especially of late, do we have all of these shootings and senseless killings going on in our own nation? If we have value, if we are important, if we're significant, where does that come from? Where do we get that idea that we're important? Maybe did we just dream it up? Are we so self-conceited with pride and ego that, oh, well, I'm important and my family's important and my friends are important? Where does it come from? How do we pass it on? And why is it so important? Well, like anything else, and the reason why we're here at this conference, is you didn't come just to hear me spout off something that you have no idea where it came from. So let's start at the beginning. Just briefly, in Genesis 1, we go through the creation, and we get down to verse 26, and we get to the sixth day, and he's already gone through all of that. But verse 26 in particular, then God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the sky, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. And God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them. And God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and rule over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the sky, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And then we'll stop there. Think about that for a minute. The only created thing, creature, that was created in the image and the likeness of God was humans. Right? Twice, in a couple verses, he repeats that. One, he says, we're going to do this, and then he repeats that we did it. Now, if God says something, is that usually important to us? Because how many questions do we have about things in this world and in life that he doesn't address? And I say, why? Well, it must not be that important to him or for us to know right now. But if he says something, that's important. But if he repeats himself in two verses, wow, that must be really important. So, think about it. If you also notice there, it says right after he created them, he did something unique that he didn't do with any of the other creatures or things that he created. It says he blessed them. They hadn't done anything. And yet he blessed them. At the beginning. And if you really think about what's going on there and his command to them, what he has been responsible for all this time, he created everything. But going along with creation was he was taking care of it, and he made it work, and he kept it going, and he made it thrive. And then all of a sudden, after he blesses them, he passes that responsibility on to them and says, I'm delegating. What I've been doing, I'm now going to let you be in charge. Do you think that also conveys some value, some worth, some importance? If God is worthy, anybody disagree? If God is worthy, if He's important, if He has significance, and He creates something and passes on that responsibility to them, can we not pretty well assume that that which is created in His image also has value, importance, and significance? In James 1 and verse 27, we'll jump to the New Testament. Now that I just lost my place. Obviously is the main passage that we usually refer to when we're talking about children. This is pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father, to visit orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself unstained by the world. If you really look and study the book of James, I'm convinced that the theme we find in chapter 4 and verse 4, that friendship with God, with the world, makes one an enemy to God. Now, what's he mean by world? Now, I ask that question, but be careful. What do we usually do? We usually grab, well, Webster's defines world as, I don't read where Webster was an inspired author in the Old or New Testament. So we've got to get our definition from the context, from the book, and the whole Bible as a whole. And so what we find is that really what he's dealing with is values that are opposed to God. He's not talking about the planet. He's not talking about people, because we're to love people. People are made in his image. And we're to, New Testament wise, we would say we're to seek people. We're to attempt to make disciples of all men. And so he's got to be talking about something different. And I truly believe he's talking about the values that are opposed to God. And so what's he saying here in verse 27? Friends of God who do his bidding. How do we do that? Well, he says we need to visit the orphans and widows, or we need to look after them. That word visit is not just, oh, I wanted to pop in, want to see you and see how you're doing. Okay, bye, hope, wish you well. You know, be filled and be happy. That term that we have interpreted or translated orphan is only used twice in the New Testament. I don't know if you knew that. And it doesn't happen until James, the Greek word that is translated orphan. If we go to the Old Testament, the Hebrew word, basically the same Hebrew word, eight times it refers to or is translated the fatherless. But 34 times it's translated orphan. Now, maybe I'm the only one, but I remember for years, even as an adult, wondering, okay, we got a responsibility for orphans. I know what an orphan is. An orphan is a child who has no parents. They're dead. They're gone. That's not a biblical concept. Actually, the biblical concept is at least one parent is missing, or the child is unwanted, or there is one or more parents who are deceased. So basically, we would say in simple language, one parent is gone. That makes a child an orphan. Whoa, think about how that blows up this whole idea of looking after orphans. Not just those who are in an institution, not just those who are blessed enough to be in a home like Mount Dora Children's Home and Bible School. We've just blown that. How many single parents do we have that we find earlier in just our nation? Think about that. I also believe there's two major themes that run through Scripture, both the Old Testament and the New Testament. The first one, there are some other major themes, so I'm not saying there aren't. But there's two that I want to focus on today. And the first one is, we can't love a God we cannot see if we do not love people who we do see. Let me say that again. We can't love a God that we cannot see if we don't love people that we can see. And the second theme, that first one is repeated over and over and over throughout Scripture. And the second one is, God has always evaluated human communities by the way they treat the weakest or the most vulnerable. Children, elderly, widows, homeless, invalids. You go on and on. Go back and read the prophets. Look at all when they are ranting and raving. And all of it stems from, you're mistreating the vulnerable. You're not taking care of them. You're not fulfilling your responsibility that I gave you. Where does all that start? Deuteronomy. Our favorite book, right? We love reading through Deuteronomy. All those laws. But I challenge you sometime to go back and read through it and notice how many of those laws have to do with protecting the vulnerable, in particular, children. It must be important. Jesus, in His earthly ministry, do you know what book He quoted or referred to more than any other? Deuteronomy. We're only told in the New Testament where Jesus was indignant twice. You know what it was about? The way they were treating children. Somehow I get the idea that this must be pretty important. And so I don't think it's a stretch, but I'll simply say I believe that James is trying to tell us that a friend of God is someone who takes care of the vulnerable. You say, well, Jerry, we have a heart for children. We're compassionate. We help support Mount Dora Children's Home or other places. So what are you trying to say? What are you suggesting? How do we bless a child that hasn't even been born? I know that's the question that was on every one of your tongues, right? You were just waiting to ask that question. And I'm so glad you did. Because that's what I want to talk about. Let me add a footnote to say, do you know there was no such thing as adoption for the Hebrews, for the Jewish people? Now, think about it, because in one of the Old Testament passages, of course there's many, but one of them in particular, there was a great battle, and 120,000 Israelites, males, were killed. Let that sink in for a second. Do you realize at the end of that battle there were at least 120,000 orphans and widows? And yet adoption was not a part of their language? Why? Because they understood the heart of God. They understood how important children and taking care of the weakest and the vulnerable. And they just absorbed them, whether it was through families or whether it was through others, but they just did it. It was natural to them. So let me tell you a story about a young lady named Brittany. Brittany was 20 years old, going to one of our major universities in Florida. She came from a fairly affluent home down south. She was majoring in pre-law, had hopes of going to law school and becoming an attorney. She had two younger siblings who looked up to her. Brittany found herself in a position that, unfortunately, many young women do today. She found herself with an unplanned pregnancy. Brittany didn't know what to do, to put it mildly. Well, she did. The important thing is, she never considered terminating that pregnancy because life was too important to her. That's not true for all young women today, even if they're raised in a very spiritually oriented home. Had a lot of moms that I've talked to who said, I was definitely pro-life, unquestionably, until I found myself pregnant. And then they give a lot of reasons that are extremely heartbreaking. Brittany chose life, but she chose not to reveal it to her family. You're saying, wait a minute, how did she, you know, she comes from an affluent family. Didn't she have to go home sometime? Didn't they come see her? Timing worked in her favor. She was, if I remember right, about 5 or 6 months along come Christmas. She had an excuse for Thanksgiving and didn't go home. Christmas, she did see them, but she was able, wintertime, and she was able to wear baggy enough clothes and nobody noticed. Her sister, who adored her, younger sister, also was a student at the same university and never knew she was pregnant. Brittany, when I asked her a lot of things after the fact, why at some point didn't she reveal this to her family? She's super close to her mom. And I said, why didn't you? You could have used her moral support. They were also a spiritually oriented family. And she just shook her head and said, there is no way I could do that to them. It would have ruined them in the church. I would have been an outcast. And they might have been shunned. And it would have been, but either way, it would have had dire consequences for my younger sister and brother. So she chose to keep her pregnancy a secret. So much so that she never went to the doctor to get prenatal care because she was afraid her parents would find out through insurance. One night, about 1:30 in the morning, she started having excruciating pains. She lived off campus, lived in an apartment suite, you know, with three other young ladies. They had no clue she was pregnant. Nobody knew she was pregnant. She grabbed her laptop, went into the bathroom, and locked the door. Now, before I tell you what happened, let me tell you about CFS, Christian Family Services. Christian Family Services was established 40 years ago this month, 1978, by just ordinary Christians who understood the Scriptures and wanted to be as obedient and heed the call as possible. It was also a few years after Roe v. Wade. And here they were right next to the University of Florida campus, watching all of these pregnancies be terminated. So they formed a nonprofit corporation overseen by a board of directors from around the state. We get a lot of the way we find the moms that we work with. We get a lot of referrals from pregnancy centers that we have spent time with. Some we even do voluntarily training to help their counselors to be better equipped in working with young women. Whether they refer to us or refer to someone else, it's all about education. We do the same thing in communities as far as trying to help educate churches, communities, groups. The interesting thing about some of the pregnancy centers is some of them are founded by and very closely associated with the Baptist Church. Two different main groups in Florida, but we work with some of them that are associated with both different groups. The interesting thing is several of them, we are the first ones they will contact to refer moms to. They won't contact the Baptist agencies. They will contact us because that's what kind of reputation Christian Family Services has, as far as working with moms, serving moms, and being a blessing to moms. The other way now has changed. It used to be the majority of moms found us through Yellow Pages or whatever. We cover about half, two-thirds of the state, anywhere from at least Tallahassee to Jacksonville down to technically Sarasota, Melbourne. We try to stay away from Orlando and Melbourne and all that area, but if we get a call, which we have, last year, we had two moms down at West Palm. We'll go wherever they are. Now they find us online. That's a new experience for us through social media and everything else. And it's not cheap. But we're dealing with that because they're finding us again. The services that we offer them, primarily, as I mentioned, we work with moms with unplanned pregnancies. In 15 years that I have been with the agency, I can count on one hand the number of older children that I have placed, because our primary focus is reaching these moms at one of the most critical times in their life, but definitely the most critical time in their child's life, because she is the only one who can affect that child's future. And so the better we can serve her, the better the umbrella of protection, if you will, the better we can build a healthy spiritual environment around her, the more likely, whichever choice she chooses, whether to parent or to place for adoption, is going to be a blessing. And the majority of the moms that we do come in contact with and or work with do ultimately discover that they can parent and they can be a blessing to that child. I didn't mention earlier, but so much of the Old Testament scripture in particular, when it talks about blessing, it's also closely associated with having children. Go back and look sometimes. and see how many times the two are associated together. It's like having children is a blessing. Having children and passing on a blessing to those children and receiving a blessing for having the children and passing on the blessing to them, we're blessed. If all that makes sense. So our goal is to help these moms to fulfill God's calling, to be a blessing. How do we do that? Well, we provide confidential and loving adoptions counseling so they can make the best choice for their baby, so their baby can be blessed. Sound familiar? We provide support, emotional, non-judgmental. And I know some today would say, well, you know, why do we go so much effort? Why are we doing all this? She got herself into this mess. She needs to learn to live with it. She needs to grow up. And we, being the church, oftentimes have a very difficult time forgiving, extending grace to a young lady who finds herself in this position. And yet I can't tell you how many moms I have worked with whose dads were in the ministry, elders, deacons, church leaders, pastors. They know what they've done. They're having a hard time forgiving themselves. One, they may have a hard time believing God's going to forgive them. So that's part of our role, is to help them to come to a greater understanding and acknowledgement of that. But the biggest battle is helping them to forgive themselves for what they've done. So it's helping them to come alongside and to guide them into saying, God is the author of making good things come out of not so good things. And this is simply another opportunity. Every child is important to God, whether it's unplanned or planned. And why should the child suffer for something that mom did? Why should the child be forced to be raised with a single parent who is maybe homeless, who can't adequately provide for her child, may get bounced around from family or here or there, you name it. Why should the child be forced to live that kind of life and basically be molded to continue to repeat history when they can receive a blessing of a Christian home and ultimately be used by God to be a blessing to someone else? You ever stop to think that whenever God wants to change the world, what's He do? Doesn't He send a baby into the world? I mean, just three come to mind off the top of my head. Samuel, Moses, Jesus. Whole nother topic, but how many cures to cancer, to Alzheimer's, to everything else we struggle with or whatever, have not come about because maybe who God was planning on working through at that moment, someone else elected, decided something different for them. So we're trying to be there for them. We provide basic necessities. Sometimes we're able to help with shelter, food, clothing, medical support. Make sure they get to prenatal visits. We provide someone to be there for them that they can count on, that they can depend on, which for so many of our moms, They've never experienced. They're jaded. They've been so downtrodden by the world that they don't trust anyone. And yet to find out that there is someone that they can depend on 24/7. We traveled to them. You heard me say a while ago, we had two moms down in West Palm. I made that trip. 5 hours down, 5 hours back. The moms we work with, we generally meet with on a weekly or at least every other week. We don't say, come see us if you need something. We're going to meet with you. We just tell them, hey, part of this process is we're going to meet with you. And we're going to talk about things. And part of our goal is to help holistically address some of the things that are going on in their life. We work with birth fathers. We work with families of both. We attempt to be a spiritual influence as much as they will allow. Obviously, we're going to honor their wishes. But it's amazing how many moms have used this experience as a turning point in their life and recognized, yeah, I was raised going to church. I was raised in a good spiritual home. But I kind of got off. I started doing my own thing. And they've recognized I need to get back to God. We help them to come up with goals for the future. We don't want them just thinking about the hospital and having this baby and then placing this baby for adoption and going home empty-handed. We want to already have them thinking about, all right, when I get out of the hospital, when I heal, what am I going to do? Am I going to get my GED? Am I going to finish my education? Am I going to go back to school or continue in school? Don't forget about Brittany. I'm going to get a good job. I'm going to save money. I'm going to become independent and maybe take care of the other children that I already have without having to lean on public welfare or depend on family or someone else to be providing for them. And we're available for them for the rest of their lives. For counseling, for help, for encouragement, for strength. Now, before I get back to Brittany, I hadn't forgot. Let me tell you about Sue and John. I have to include John because they are a pair. Sue is 20, John is 19. Sue is 100% Venezuelan, but she was born in this country. John is Romanian, but he was adopted as a young child by a very affluent family up north who was in the medical field. John has the most horrific life story you have ever heard. Been in and out of 8 different training rehab schools, never completed one. John and Sue had been together on the streets for a year and a half. Sue got pregnant. Neither one of them believed in termination. They had no transportation. They both were go-getters. They weren't living off welfare. They had part-time jobs and they made ends meet. And they had a little bitty apartment. Definitely wasn't much. Didn't look like much. You might not want your dog to live there. But it was a shelter for them. John had the most deep-seated bitterness and anger towards his parents and his father in particular. We couldn't talk about anything without everything pointing back to Dad, and it was his fault. It's his fault. This is his fault. This is his fault. This was his fault. I like to pull my hair out trying to work with them. Loved working with Sue. John was a different story because they're a pair. So I can't work with Sue without John being there. So if you can visualize maybe how frustrating that can be at times. Long story short, even with his bitterness, his parents came down to Florida for Christmas holiday. They invited them to come down for a long weekend. They did. His parents went back home. They came back to their home. I got a call from his dad. And the first thing he says is, "You have to promise me that John will never know that I've talked to you." Okay. He said, "We just had a fantastic visit. Better than I can ever remember." And he said, "I don't know who you are or what you've said to him, but you are the only male that he respects and looks up to." And he said, "We want to help you. Keep doing what you've been doing." And I said, "Well, that's nice." That's always welcome. Long story short, Sue has her baby, their baby. Of course, by this point, they had chosen an adoption plan. Because of John's bad adoption experience, I thought, there's no way he's going to go through with it. The adoption was his idea. Because he knew under their circumstances, they had no way to provide for a child the way either one of them wanted that child to be cared for. And he was also fearful that he might repeat the behavior that came from his home. So they chose a good Christian family. A good Christian family from one of the churches around here. In fact, there's an elder's wife over here from that congregation. And in fact, they have four of our adoptive families now within the last 2-3 years. Great family, but even more important, that family is a blessing to that mom and dad. Now, I know that child is blessed. I get to see it from time to time. See her. Excuse me, not an it. See her. And let me tell you what God's doing in their life. The minute they place that child for adoption, out of the blue, his dad gave him a car. Now they suddenly have transportation. Almost at the exact same time, Sue got offered a state job, permanent, with benefits. Took a little bit, but he found a career. They both have found a career. They both have been getting promotions. We were able, even during the pregnancy, we got Sue attached to one of the Churches of Christ in the area where they live. And she went the first time by herself. John couldn't handle that anymore, so he wanted to go to make sure and take care of her, that somebody wasn't going to take advantage of her. They both are now active attendees. I'm not going to say members. But that congregation knows their situation, especially since they were involved before the baby came. Just simply threw their arms around them, loved on them, and been doing everything for them. And I can see time is going to run out. I'm not going to mention all this, but there's Cheryl, who was 35, had 4 kids, oldest 18, youngest 7, full-time job, single parent, taking care of them by herself, no assistance, got pregnant. She was struggling to make ends meet for those 4 kids. In fact, during the pregnancy, she had to cut her hours some and ultimately sent the 7-year-old to live with his father until the baby came. Her rationale for placing this baby, and I guarantee you when that time came, it was the most difficult thing she has ever done in her life. The easiest thing for her to do would have been to take that baby home and say, "We'll figure out a way." But she said, "No, I want this child to have better. I don't want to have to be it to struggle. And I have an obligation to the 4 kids I already have to be the mom that I committed to being for them." And so that's what she did. Ashley, 33 years old, young, single, had a career, capable, financially and otherwise, of being a great mom, even a single mom. She made a mistake with an old friend who she readily admit was not husband material and definitely was not father material. She was also She was caring for three of her younger sisters, her nieces, her younger sisters' daughters. Somehow that's not coming out. You get the idea. She chose a beautiful Christian family that she adores. She hears from regularly, and she knows exactly where that son is and how he is being blessed. Why was that so important to her if she had all this capability? She was raised in a single-parent home, and she vowed from a very early age she would never do that to one of her kids. Was it easy? Hardest thing that she had ever done. Okay, I promised you I'd finish up about Brittany. Brittany took her laptop into the bathroom. On the floor is Googling to confirm whether or not she's in labor. She determines she is in labor, and the contractions are close enough. This baby is imminent. So she Googles, how do you deliver a baby by yourself? She delivers it on the bathroom floor by herself, cleans the baby up, cleans herself up as best she can. Then she Googles, she happens to remember Florida has Safe Haven, where you can go, any parent can take a child 7 days or younger to a hospital or fire station and simply hand it to them, no questions asked, and leave. Not be chased by DCF and accused of abandonment or anything else. But for the child's sake, that's called a safe haven law. So she Googled, how do I safe haven? Someone on the other end quickly responded at 2 o'clock in the morning. She called the local hospital, drove herself and the baby to the ER. They, of course, immediately admitted the baby. She refused to let them admit her, but they served her. And we got a call. Long story short, after a tremendous amount of crash counseling and everything else, trying to find any other option before she made this step, she chose a beautiful Christian family to raise her daughter. What do we do with all this? We're important to God. We have value. We have worth. God expects us to honor and to look after orphans. Well, obviously, and some of you in here are young enough, we can consider adoption. Or you may know someone who needs to consider adoption. It might surprise you to know we work with more families who already have biological children but still want to adopt than we do couples who are dealing with infertility. Some families just feel called by God. Hey, He wants us to provide a good, loving home to another child. Some families are dealing with the loss of a dream of being able to produce their own children and feel that God is providing another opportunity. So please share that with anybody that you know. To the adopted family, obviously that baby is a gift from that mom and a gift from God. But did you ever realize that to that birth mom, the adoptive family is God's answered prayer for her child? Because she's praying for a good Christian home for her child. You can be a friend. You can be a mentor to a young lady. You can provide safe shelter. I'll give you an idea. What if the whole church, the whole congregation committed together to say, hey, we're going to reach out and we're going to take in a young lady under these circumstances, and we're just going to love on her, and we're going to be there for her. And we, if we need to provide shelter, we'll do that, or take her into our homes, but we're going to cover all of her bases holistically. What effect do you think that would have on her? You can volunteer, not just in the office that we always can use, but people don't all live in the Gainesville area, and we understand that. But a lot of people have professional skills and expertise that, if you think about it, we might be able to benefit from. So there's a lot of ways that can be helped. You can be a church liaison. You can help be a coordinator for local education, fundraising events, things of that nature, and help us. I want to close, because our time is up. I want to close with a poem. And this poem could be about a lot of moms that we work with. Quite a mistake she was born. She was not a rose, but an unwanted thorn. Born to a mother that had abused herself, who had abandoned herself. Born to a daddy that had whiskey on the shelf. Badly abused, her mother left him, took her along, and life was very grim. She was the thrown-away child that nobody wanted. So many daddies that she still haunted. Abused all of her life, she was finally grown. Slapped around a lot, against the wall she was thrown. Every man she chose was just like her dad. And still to this day, she stays pretty sad. Only needing to know that someone will care. She hasn't got much left of a heart to share. We can't love a God that we can't see if we don't love the people that we can see. And I leave with the final question. What are we as individuals? How are we individually and as a Christian community? How are we treating the most vulnerable? Will you bow with me, please? Our most gracious and loving Father, thank you for this day. Thank you for the blessing of this workshop. There's so much that has been shared and so many things that have touched our hearts. And Father, our prayer is that we will not just hear them and applaud them, but that we truly will take them to heart. And when we leave, with your help and your Spirit guiding us, find a way to put some of these things into action so that we too can know that we are fulfilling your heart as we continue to be a blessing to the vulnerable. It's through your precious Son's name we pray. Amen.